Moncrief on News Talk.
Tusa Louverture is often referred to as the first black superhero of the modern age. He was a man who led a slave revolt in what eventually became Haiti. Sudhir Hazare Singh is the author of a book about him called Black Spartacus, The Epic Life of Tusa Louverture. Sudhir, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Sean.
Tusa's early life, how much is known about that?
Well, it's a bit frustrating for the biographer because although we have a lot of documents about everything that happened to him in the last 10 years of his life, we have very few actual documents. So we don't even know when exactly he was born. We don't know, and until recently, we didn't even know the exact dates of his marriages, I should say, because we believe he was married more than once. And we don't know the exact date either when he was freed from slavery, because although we know for a fact that he was emancipated by the manager of the plantation where he was born, we don't have the exact document either. A lot of stuff we have to not guess exactly, but try and work out on the basis of other documents that we do have.
And even though the regime for most slaves was extremely brutal at the time, his was relatively benign, would that be fair to say?
Well, I think it's hard to kind of qualify anyone living under slavery as having benign treatment. On the other hand, he did become part of the plantation, management structure. And so he was never what were called field slaves. So they were the ones who suffered the harshest treatments. And of course, a large number of field slaves, you know, at some point, one in every three person who came to work in the fields died. So he never had to endure that kind of extremity. And it was also the case that, as far as we know, the treatment of slaves on the plantation that he grew up in was relatively, wasn't as cruel as it was elsewhere. And of course, being the assistant in effect of the manager, which is what he becomes by the 1770s, he's actually in a position not just to defend himself and defend his interests, but also those of the people around him.
When he was given his freedom, then for a time, did he have his own plantation and at least one slave?
Well, we have one, as it were, incomplete document, which shows him taking over the plantation of someone who was a relative of his. He leased it for a few years. And that has led some people to believe that he actually himself owned slaves for a long period of time. There's no evidence to that effect, but it's certainly true. I think what we can say is that it shouldn't be surprising that someone who lived under a system which was dominated by slavery had to, at various moments in time, participate in it, as it were. And even when he became a freeman, you couldn't avoid not getting involved in the system because that was the only system available.
And I suppose it's worth pointing out there were divisions in Haitian society between people of African origin, people of mixed heritage, and white people, and various forces were trying to maintain their position.
Oh, absolutely. Until 1791, the major division, of course, is between the whites, the white settlers and the rest. And there's about 30,000 of them. There's about 30,000 mixed-race people and 500,000 slaves, most of them by the early 1790s, people who were actually born in Africa. But you had subdivisions within each of these groups. The whites, there was a big division between the wealthy plantation owners or the industrialists and the ones who were called the petit blanc, the little whites, who were actually, in terms of their objective circumstances, not at all wealthy or affluent. All these divisions, of course, come to a head after 1789, when the French Revolution has a very profound impact on the events in the colony of Saint-Domingue.
Now, it seemed to be a time of ferment even before he became directly involved. Is it clear when he became involved in the revolutionary movement?
Well, we know for sure that he becomes involved as from around August, September of 1791. Before that, we actually don't have any documents about any of the revolutionary activities, so we don't know. But again, here, everything, working things out deductively, it seems pretty obvious that he is involved with the elite of black freedmen and slaves who worked on the plantations, who were methodically planning the insurrection in the months and indeed probably in the years before 1791. They were meeting regularly on Sundays, and the insurrection starts in mid-August 1791 at a meeting which is attended by representatives of 100 plantations from the north of the colony. And that's the kind of kickoff. But that meeting wasn't the only one. There had been many before.
And would it be fair to say part of his strength, and obviously he was a brilliant strategist, but a willingness to build coalitions between the various groups in Haiti to bring about these revolutions?
That's, I think, is both what's remarkable about him and what is the source of his great strength. Because what's remarkable is that from the get-go, you see that he's someone who's not on a kind of extreme nationalist or kind of separatist position where, you know, for example, a lot of black people, you know, quite understandably, given that they and their ascendants had been enslaved by the whites for 100 years, a lot of them just did not see a future for Saint-Domingue in which the white population had a legitimate role. But Toussaint, from the very outset, is someone who believes passionately that as long as everyone buys into the principles of human rights, right, that everybody should have their equality and their freedom recognized, that there's a place for everybody in a future republic of Saint-Domingue. So he reaches out to the whites, he tries to reach out to the mixed race leaders. And what you see from official reports, not from Toussaint himself, but from French officials, is that by the end of the 1790s, 8 or 9 out of 10 people in Saint-Domingue are supporters of Toussaint Louverture, and it's a support that just cuts across all the different racial groups, cuts across religions. He's just a phenomenally popular and successful leader.
And during that period, how many colonial powers attacked the island?
Oh, everybody's trying to get out of Saint-Domingue because it was known as the Pearl of the Antilles. It was this extraordinarily wealthy and prosperous colony, you know, one of the largest, if not the largest, sugar producer in the world, production of coffee, indigo, etc., cotton. So it really is a kind of star prize for the different empires. So the French are already there. They've held Saint-Domingue for about 100 years, but the British are trying to recapture it. They come in 1793. And Toussaint fights them for 5 years and then kicks them out. The Spaniards are there as well. And the Spaniards control the eastern part of the island, of Hispaniola, which, today is known as the Dominican Republic. And the Spaniards at various points in the 1790s are also trying to take control of the island. So Toussaint has to navigate his way through all these different foreign powers trying to establish their presence there. And later on, the Americans come in as well. And Toussaint is very skillful because he manages to enlist the support of the Americans in his fight against some of his own internal enemies.
Did it become increasingly difficult for him to keep those coalitions solid? And did he have to perhaps resort to more authoritarian methods to keep control?
Well, I think that is one of the kind of big questions in terms of interpreting the later years of his leadership. For me, the crucial thing in his mind was, he could see coming from the late 1790s that the French were intent on restoring slavery. In the early years of the French Revolution, slavery is abolished in 1794 by the French, but from 1796, 1797 onwards in Paris, the colonial lobby is pushing harder and harder for some kind of restoration of slavery, and they're the groups that are increasingly powerful, and they're gathering around Napoleon. So Toussaint tries really desperately to strike a kind of entente with Napoleon and with the people around him. And the reason why he has to take such strong measures internally is because he's preparing for this invasion, which he knows is coming in all likelihood, and he needs to try and stop it by all ways possible. And he was absolutely certain that the French would come back and try and restore slavery. So that doesn't necessarily excuse some of the authoritarian measures that he took, but it certainly puts them in perspective.
And initially, it seemed like he was successful at rebuffing the French, but then they kind of they set a trap to capture him.
Yes, well, he had a plan, which was to basically fight them initially and fight them to a stalemate, and then eventually reach a compromise and a ceasefire, and then basically allow time and the weather to take its toll on the occupation forces. Because that's basically how he defeated the English, right? They were defeated by disease, by yellow fever in particular, which, you know, basically completely decimated the occupation forces. And that's eventually what would happen to the French, 3 years later. Toussaint had already anticipated that. But what he didn't completely anticipate is how double-crossing the French were. And so, having just signed a kind of peace treaty with him, they laid a trap, and he fell into it. And they captured him and immediately exiled him and his family to France.
Which is where he eventually died, I understand.
He dies a year later, exactly, in a fort in eastern France. And that's where, we don't even have his remains, but that's where he unfortunately ended his life. But of course, he became the stuff of legend almost immediately. You know, he was already a legend by then. And the fact that he becomes a martyr for the cause of liberty and the cause of struggle against Napoleon's forces just turns him into this extraordinarily potent appeal for freedom. And his praises are sung by poets everywhere, including, of course, in Ireland. I mean, the Irish in the late 18th and early 19th century see a lot of parallels between the situation of colonial Saint-Domingue attacked by the French and the situation in Ireland occupied by the British. So there's a lot of similarity there. And all across the 19th and 20th century, you have a lot of really lovely echoes from Ireland in terms of celebrating Toussaint Louverture.
Yeah, it is an extraordinary story. Sudhir Hazara Singh is the author of Black Spartacus, The Epic Life of Toussaint Louverture. Sudhir, thank you very much.
Thank you, Sean.
Moncrief on News Talk.